Session number 5868, Hot in Monday, part 9.
Well, I'll carry on now where I left off a few days ago. Now, those three kind ladies still came to visit us in the park once a week. And on one occasion, Emily said, would I like to go to Birmingham and meet her husband and stay the weekend, which I did. Now, they kept a corner grocer's shop in one of the streets, and I met her husband. He was a very nice chap, and they'd got two little children. He hadn't been called up, not then, and in the evening we went to the public house where the other one kept, the Beehive, and we had a table there. We hadn't been there many minutes when in came the other friend of theirs, the lady that kept the pawn shop, and the landlord's wife, that of course the other lady, and we had a table there and spent a lovely Saturday evening together. I really enjoyed that. Well, now, in the morning, after breakfast in the morning, Emily said to me, she says, I've got a present for you. And it was a ring, a gold diamond ring. And it was in an old case that looked as though it had been kicked about for years. And she said, I've got this for you from the other lady, I forget her name, that kept the pawn shop. She says, I've got this for you. And I gave her £5 for it. Well, now, well, she said she gave her £5 for it. I've just had a cough in touch. And £5 in those days was real money, because you could get a new suit of clothes made to measure for £2. But anyway, that's what it was, and it was a lovely snaked diamond ring. It got three bands on it, and the head had got three diamonds in it. It's a beautiful ring, and I never got rid of it. And often, when I was about, years and years later, I was offered a lot of money for it at times when I could really have done with it. But I didn't, and I never got rid of it. Well, just about that time, it would be, as near as I can remember, about the 16th or 17th of May, the clocks was altered. Summertime started. Well, now that's the first time that I ever remember summertime coming into operation. That happened then about the 16th of May, 1916. Well, just after that, there was a notice put up on the orderly room door. Any farm labourers, was there any farm labourers in the camp? Because they was badly needed on the farms. Well, I thought, here goes. So I went in and saw the adjutant and told him that I was a farm labourer. Because I wasn't. I was a coach bodymaker, really. But I said I was, and he said, well, can you get a reference? And I said, yes. So I wrote to my father, and he knew this was farming land, quite a lot round here. And my dad knew a farmer, and the only farming I ever did, of course, was getting mushrooms, blackberries, or catching a rabbit and so forth. That's all I knew about farming, and he saw him and asked if he would give a reference that I work for him. So he did do. And I took it and I got the job, got a farm labourer's job, and I was sent to a village called Breedon, and that was very close to a town called Tewkesbury. That's Gloucestershire. Lovely part it was. Well, I had to report to the local farmer there. I always remember his name, Father Dyer. Now, I went to him, and there was two other soldiers in the village, and also that was doing farm labouring work. Well, I went to this farmer, and he took me to a cottage in the village, to an old couple. Well, I say old, me being 21, well, anyone around the 40s to 50 was old to me, so I'll call them an old couple, and they were a lovely old couple, and there was a soldier billeted there at the time. Well, when I went to the door, he took me to the door, and this late old lady, soon as she spotted me, she started and cried her eyes out. So I said, "What's the matter?" "Oh," she said, "I thought, are you in my son's regiment?" I said, "All according to what it is." Well, it appears that her son had just been killed, and he was in the KRRs. Well, now, all rifle regiments used to wear black buttons and a black cap badge. Well, now, the Buckinghamshire Territorials was a rifle regiment then, and we wore black buttons, and our cap badge was almost exactly the same as the KRRs, which her son was in when he was killed. And cap badge, just the same, sort of a Maltese cross. Well, that was the same as her son had gotten. Oh dear, oh dear. When I got on very well there, and it didn't take Farmer Dyer long to know I knew nothing about farming, because the first day I started, it happened to be raining, and he said, "Take this scythe, go up," he said, "into a field," he told me to go. He said, "Go on," he said, "and cut the thistles down, clear that up." And he gave me a little jar, half-gallon jar, which was the routine, with homemade cider in. Well, that done me all right. And, oh dear, trying to cut thistles with one of those long scythes, the end kept digging in the ground. He come out to me, he said, "You don't know much about farming." I said, "No, I don't, but I'll learn." And I got on very well. We had a marvellous time there. The main job there was, of course, hay making. Well, I got used to that all right. I learned how to harness horse, drive a wagon load of hay, missing the gate post very close at times. But any road, it carried on all right. Well, I was there altogether about a month. Now, on one occasion, Emily and her sister came down for one day, and I had a time off from the farm, in the afternoon anyway. And we went into Tewkesbury, had an enjoyable time there, looked over the cathedral. I think it was a cathedral, but it was a large church, I remember. We had a look round that and spent quite a pleasant day. Well, now back at the lodge, where I was lodging with this old couple, there was another soldier there lodging, and he wasn't at all a nice chap. We didn't get on at all well together. Anyway, it ended up, finished the month off, and then I had to return, of course, to Sutton Park. Well, where this other chap went, I don't know. But he didn't come back to Sutton, and I always used to carry a 10-shilling note in my wallet, because there was a sort of an iron ration, as you call them in those days, in case of I was tangled up, I'd always got a reserve of a 10-shilling note. Well, I remember we finished up at this lodge, said goodbye to the old lady, and toddled off back to Sutton. Well, when I got back to Sutton Park, I'd got very little, only a few coppers, and I thought, well, I'll go in the canteen and have a drink. And I thought, well, I'll have to break into me 10 bob. And when I put my hand in my wallet, I'm blowed if that chap coming away that morning hadn't pinched me 10 bob. Well, 10 bob was a lot of money then. But anyway, it had gone. And hadn't been back very long then before I had to go before another medical board. And I was past C1 or C2, something like that. Anyway, the meaning was I'd finished with war, at least I thought I was. And straight away after I'd had that, before that medical board, I was transferred straight away then from there to Mersey Island on the Essex coast. And I don't think I ever saw Emily again after that. And I was sent there and had to report. There was a lot of tents on the coast. I don't know if you've ever been to Mersey. There's East and West Mersey. Well, in those days, it was only small places. And East Mersey, there was just one or two cottages and a village pub. And I had to report they was old National Reservists, this lot there. Well, I don't suppose it'd be 100 all told. And there was a captain in charge of them, and they were very similar to the last war, what you call Home Garden, the last war, that type of person. Mainly old, but there was quite a number of younger chaps there. And they was all Buckinghamshire reservists, and that's why I was sent there, I suppose. But there was a few there that I knew beforehand, younger ones. And the captain in charge, it was just the one officer, and he lived there, lived in house there. Well, when I got there, he said to me straight away, he said, of course, he said, you'll be unpaid, Lance Corporal, here. I said, what? He said, yes, you're unpaid. I said, well, in that case, I got my old jackknife and cut them off. I said, yeah, you can have these. I'm not walking about with them on for nothing. So I wrote a letter to the quartermaster in France. So I knew, well, he was a local man, the quartermaster sergeant, name of Marsh. I wrote to him and told him what had happened. He wrote back, he said, no, he said, you're all right, he said, you tell him you'll be paid. He said, and not only that, he said, if you hadn't have been wounded, he said, the day when you was, he said, it was coming on orders that you would have been a full corporal, never mind the Lance Corporal. I thought, well, never mind, that don't matter. But, so I went and took this letter to the officer, this captain, and me and him got ever so pally after that, and I had quite a nice little job there. He put me in charge of the stores department in a big marquee where the stores was. Well, there was that and the cookhouse, and it was a smashing time. I had the time of my life there. I tell you, I was doing no soldiering at all, as the saying is, and we used to put a sort of a post out round the coast. Well, straight opposite East Mersey, there was a, I think it's Brightlingsea, almost opposite. And then laying off the coast was a naval vessel, warship of some sort. And we got in touch with them, and we used to have a right roll time. We used to play football then. We had a football team in the camp, these tents, and then there was the team all for this warship, and we carried on there. The Coast Guard used to signal and organise a football match versus the Army and Navy and so on. We really enjoyed ourselves there. Every week I used to have a small parcel come from Emily, keeping a grocer's shop, and she looked after me ever so well. Every week she used to send me a parcel with cigarettes, chocolate, and so on, toilet soap, scented soap, and used to have a parcel and always a letter inside, and most week, very seldom she missed, she used to put a 10 shilling note in it. So we kept that right up. In fact, that carried on till I went abroad at the finish. But I used to have a lovely parcel from her, and we carried on there. And at night of an evening, I used to take a rifle, a 202 rifle, go out along the fields there, shoot a rabbit, bring it back. The old cooker there, he used to brew that up for us. We used to sit playing cards then in the marquee, all lights out. We used to have a little lantern, and one or two of the sergeants and that, just a little bunch. We used to sit there, play cards. Well, in the night, the old cook used to brew this rabbit up. We used to have a stew and have a real good time. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Now, here's a little tale. Perhaps it might be, this would be history. I'm sure it would. Because whilst we was there, one night, it had been September, and I should say around about the 20th of September, I'm sure I'm right, the Zeppelin came down. That was the first Zeppelin that dropped in England, and that was on Mersey Island off the Essex coast, and that was about, around about the 20th of September. And what, why I'm so sure about it, because there was east and west of Mersey Island. Now, they built the town, what you might call a town, or for the largest part, was in West Mersey. Now, this Zeppelin came down in the centre of the island, and it was a policeman from the western side of the island. These, all the crew of that Zeppelin got out. There wasn't one hurt at all. They all got out. Policemen took them to the western side of the island, and they rang us up from this side where the camp was to send a guard on this Zeppelin. Well, they set fire to it, in reality. They set fire to that Zeppelin. They give themselves up, and they was taken to West Mersey Police Station, and they told me later, some of the policemen told me, they offered them a feed or something, and the tray they give it on had got King George and Queen Mary's photos on the tray, and they threw the tray on the floor in disgust. But anyway, now I'm going to tell you what actually happened in my case. Captain sent for me. He said, get a guard, take it, go over and put a guard on that Zeppelin. Now, I did do. I took about half a dozen men. I put a guard round it. Well, there's no need for a guard, but I put a guard round it. And it was burnt out. And there was a piece of the propeller left that wasn't burnt. I cut a piece of that off, and I brought it home, and my wife kept it right up till she died. Now I can't find it. I look for it, but it's gone, but she kept it all those years. Well, now, what is a little tale now I'm going to tell you that I've carried on all through the years. It was outside a farmhouse, this building was, in the very early of the morning when I got there. An old farmer come out and he said, would I like a mug of tea? I said, yes. Well, he brought me a mug of tea, old-fashioned farm mugs, and he put a lot of whiskey in it, and he says, that'll do you good. Now, ever since then, well, not ever since then, of course, but in later years, or many years back, and now a regular, I always have a little drop of whiskey in my first cup of tea in the morning, and that's where I first learned for a cup of tea with a drop of whiskey in my tea. Well, I'll carry on now where I left off last night. We still continued to carry on Mersey Island and stayed there right to the autumn. And it was up in the morning early, head of the tent, 200 yards or so away into the sea for a swim, back again. And it was a very enjoyable time there, and I enjoyed it. But like all good things, it came to an end. And then I met me Waterloo. And, oh dear, oh Lord, there was a small batch of us, the younger ones evidently. We were sent from there to Catterick Camp in Yorkshire. Now you never heard of such a unholy show there was. Well, because everybody knows Catterick Camp. I don't think it's a lot better today. But anyway, it was Catterick Camp we had to go to in Yorkshire, out on the moors. Well, at that time, Catterick Camp was like a small town of wood nuts. And how many regiments was there, I can't tell. But I think every regiment in the British Army, be what I saw of it. And they was practically all youngsters that was coming up then, coming in the age of 18, because conscription was in, around the age of 18, and they was called up and they was there, because there was a few older ones, and each one had their own regiment or battalion, which it may be. Well, those huts then, in the centre of the hut was an old coal stove with a pipe running through the ceiling, a bucket of coal by the side, and as winter came, the door opened one end of the hut, and if somebody by mistake opened the other door, the other end by any chance, well, it was just a cloud of snow blew straight through in one end and out the other. There was a hell of a show. Now, what actually happened when I got there, a little bunch of us, I reported to the orderly room, and a corporal came and said, "I'll take you to your bed." Well, he took me to this particular hut and showed me my bed, which in those days was some boards about a foot off the ground, and a mattress and a bolster and a couple of blankets. Well, I chucked me kit bag on the bed, and just as I was taking me coat off, some chap come up to me. He says, "Oh," he says, "Bob," he said, "I'm glad you've come." He said, "Tom is here." I said, "You've got the wrong man." "No, I ain't," he said. He said, "Tommy," he said, "he's here, Jim's brother." I said, "I don't know who you're on about." He said, Jim, he said, "You're at Wickham," he said. "I Wickham," he said, "I remember you." Anyway, it worked off at that, and he said, he said, "Yeah, Tommy's here." That was Jim's younger brother. Well, I didn't know. Although the sporting papers at that time of day was full of it, that he would be better even than Jim was in his heyday. And he was very prominent then, this Tommy was, Jim's younger brother. He says, I'll take you over and introduce him. I could hardly get my coat off before he dragged me away to this other hut. Introduced me to Tommy, and this chap said, he said, "He can't get any sparring partners," he said, "so I'm glad you're here." I said, "What, with all the thousands, there must have been 10 or 20,000 troops there." I said, "Can't he get any sparring partners then?" "No," he said, "he can't." He said, "They come once and won't come again." I thought, oh, blimey, I could understand. Anyhow, Tommy and I, we got settled down then, and I used to train there every night with him, and after we finished at night, he used to take me along to the canteen and buy me supper for me, which was was very nice then, and he was very prominent. He was having fights all over the north of England, Darlington, York, and all that way round of a weekend, because he was getting loads of money for it. So it paid him all right, and I used to, well, of a night, something on 8 or 10 rounds I used to go with him to keep him going. And he, as I say, bought me supper. I was happy enough. Now, I thought since then, I thought, blimey, now they pay blokes £5 or £10 a round for sparring partners, but that don't matter. Now then, I'm going to tell you the tale. This is where I really come unstuck. Been there some time, and I had a letter come from my mother, and she said, get leave and come home, George is home on leave, embarkation leave. I thought, blimey, what the silly young fool want to join for? But anyway, he joined up, and he wasn't 18, I know. And so I went to the captain. Now, here's a funny thing I told you early on. The captain was Captain Frith. Do you remember I told you on a tape or two before this that lieutenant that went abroad with me in when we went from Burnham, when we went back up to the Somme? Well, he was with me then. Well, now he was back here, wounded, in this camp at Catterick, and he was the captain of there. So, of course, we had quite a lot in common. Anyway, what happened, I had this letter from me mother. Come home as quick as you can. George is home on leave. So I went to Captain Frith. I said, I've got a letter from me mum. Can I get leave? Will the colonel give me leave for a few days? He says, I'll see him for you. Well, he went and saw the colonel, and the colonel said, no, he said, he's got to have his firing course. He can't go home on leave until he's had a firing course. I said, oh, blimey. I said, 1914, I passed out as a first class shot on Purfleet Ranges in 1914. I've been abroad twice in the infantry. I said, I reckon I know how to fire a rifle now. He said, well, he said he won't. He said he won't let you have it. Oh, no, blimey. Well, now the next day, I had a telegram. I don't know if it was the next day or the day after, but I know it was on a Friday. I had a telegram from my mother. Come home, George. George wants to see you. Come home. So I thought, well, this will do it. So I went and saw Captain Frith. I'll call him Frith. I feel sure that's his name. I went and saw him. I said, I've had a telegram from me mum now. I said, would you tell the colonel if he'll grant me leave, I'll volunteer for the next draft abroad. I said, no, I'm not passed, but I said, tell him I'll volunteer and go on the next draft if he'll give me leave. Well, the next day came, Friday, payday. We lined up at the table. When I got my pay, the captain said, it's no good. He says, he absolutely refuses to allow you to go till you had that firing course. I thought, oh, blime O'Reilly. So, no, I should have mentioned, in the hut, I ran into one of my old mates that was in our tent at High Wycombe, an Aylesbury kid, chap, named Vic Matthews. Old Vic and I were ever so thick, they're friends there then at Catterick. I went back in the hut. I said to old Vic, old Vic said, how'd you get on? I said, he won't let me go. So he said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going. So I said, let's go down the... Oh, blimey.